Hey, before we begin, as you probably know, it's Black Friday, and if you have even $5 to spend, maybe consider giving that $5 to a people, place, or thing that could use that $5. And if you don't have that $5, keep it for yourself because you are important and you need to survive in this world that seems ever more determined to stamp out our existence. Ooh, so uplifting. Anyway, let's get back to Scrooge, who is royally unnerved in his quarters after seeing Marley's face in his door knocker. "Humbug," said Scrooge, and walked across the room. After several turns, he sat down again. As he threw his head back in the chair, his glance happened to rest upon a bell, a disused bell that hung in the room, and communicated for some purpose now forgotten with a chamber in the highest story of the building. It was with great astonishment, and with a strange, inexplicable dread, that as he looked, he saw the bell begin to swing. It swung so softly in the outset that it scarcely made a sound. But soon it rang loudly, and so did every bell in the house. This might have lasted half a minute or a minute, but it seemed an hour. The bells ceased as they had begun, together. They were succeeded by a clanking noise deep down below, as if some person were dragging a heavy chain over the casks in the wine merchant's cellar. Scrooge then remembered to have heard that ghosts in haunted houses were described as dragging chains. The cellar door flew open with a booming sound, and then he heard the noise much louder on the floors below, then coming up the stairs, then coming straight towards his door. "It's humbug still," said Scrooge. "I won't believe it." His color changed, though, when, without a pause, it came on through the heavy door and passed into the room before his eyes. Upon its coming in, the dying flame leaped up as though it cried, "I know him! Marley's ghost!" and fell again. The same face, the very same. Marley in his pigtail, usual waistcoat, tights and boots, the tassels on the ladder bristling like his pigtail, and his coat skirts and the hair upon his head. The chain he drew was clasped about his middle. It was long and wound about him like a tail. And it was made, for Scrooge observed it closely, of cash boxes, keys, padlocks, ledgers, deeds, and heavy purses wrought in steel. His body was transparent, so that Scrooge, observing him and looking through his waistcoat, could see the two buttons on his coat behind. Scrooge had often heard it said that Marley had no bowels, but he had never believed it until now. No, nor did he believe it even now, though he looked the phantom through and through and saw it standing before him, though he felt the chilling influence of its death-cold eyes and marked the very texture of the folded kerchief bound about its head and chin, which wrapper he had not observed before. He was still incredulous, and fought against his senses. "How now?" said Scrooge, caustic and cold as ever. "What do you want with me?"
"Much," said Marley's voice, "no doubt about it."
"Who are you?"
"Ask me who I was."
"Who were you, then?" said Scrooge, raising his voice.
"You're particular for a shade." He was going to say to a shade, but substituted this as more appropriate. "In life, I was your partner, Jacob Marley."
Can you sit down?" asked Scrooge, looking doubtfully at him.
"I can."
Do it then.
Scrooge asked the question because he didn't know whether a ghost so transparent might find himself in a condition to take a chair, and felt that in the event of it being impossible, it might involve the necessity of an embarrassing explanation. But the ghost sat down on the opposite side of the fireplace, as if he were quite used to it. "You don't believe in me," observed the ghost.
"I don't," said Scrooge.
"What evidence would you have of my reality beyond that of your senses?"
"I don't know," said Scrooge.
"Why do you doubt your senses?"
"Because," said Scrooge,
"a little thing affects them. A slight disorder of the stomach makes them cheat. You may be an undigested bit of beef, a blot of mustard, a crumb of cheese, a fragment of underdone potato. There's more of gravy than of grave about you, whatever you are."
Scrooge was not much in the habit of cracking jokes, nor did he feel, in his heart, by any means waggish then. The truth is that he tried to be smart as a means of distracting his own attention and keeping down his terror, for the specter's voice disturbed the very marrow in his bones.
"I want to keep going, but also I'm just watching the time and I need to not finish this whole scene in order to try to keep it nice and short for you. Going forward, I might extend these to 10 minutes as previously mentioned, but first I think that I am going to maybe send these out on weekends, since this is genuinely a really lovely part of my morning routine and I'm very much enjoying reading this. And I'm very grateful that you're here along for the ride, once again, letting me into your ear holes. Thank you so much for listening. I love you all so much. And tomorrow we will pick up with a very disturbed Ebenezer Scrooge. Thank you once again for listening. Take good care of your hearts and talk to you tomorrow. Bye.